This episode was so much fun. We chatted with our new friend, Whitney Hansen, self-proclaimed money nerd. We cover her journey working through school, buying a house at the ripe old age of 19, and how to pay off a lot of debt in less than a year. Please join me in welcoming Whitney to the show.
Welcome to Fire Drill Podcast, where side hustles, savings, and creativity lead to financial independence. With your hosts, Gwen from Fiery Millennials and Jay from Millennial Boss.
We are super excited to have Whitney Hansen on as our guest today. Welcome, Whitney.
Hey, guys. Thanks so much for having me.
The pleasure is all ours. And speaking of ours, we have our wonderful co-host, Jay, here as well.
Hello.
So, Whitney, go ahead and tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I am Whitney Hansen. I live in Boise, Idaho, the other Iowa, as we were joking about. So I am a personal finance coach for millennial females. So I help people pay off debt, live on a budget, and eventually get to the point where they're not so stressed out about money. So that's kind of what I do today. And how I mainly do that is through coaching. But I have courses and a ton of free resources and a podcast as well to try to help educate people to get their stuff together financially.
Can we kick it off by talking a little bit about Boise? It's not Iowa, as we've discussed before, but I've actually heard some awesome things about living in Boise. And from, you know, the fact that it's cheap to buy a house there and it's a good place for rental properties, to the fact that living there is awesome and there's tons of outdoors activities and it's not the middle of nowhere, like it's happening, it's a busy city, it's awesome. So yeah. Do you agree with that?
Oh my gosh, so much so. It's pretty much always going to be my home base. So the city itself, we've got probably about 300,000 to 400,000 people in the city and some of the suburbs. But the tech scene is starting to boom here, which is really exciting for us to see all these like really cool tech companies coming in. It's very happening with angel investing as well. So for entrepreneurs that are listening in, it's a good city. The river runs right smack in the middle of it. So during the summer, everybody just like floats down the river and drinks beer. You're not really supposed to, but we do anyways. It's really a cool place. And yes, real estate right now is high. But it normally is pretty good. We're just going through a shortage at the time.
So what is high? Like what's a maybe a 3-bedroom or a 2-bedroom or something? Give us some type of index.
Like a standard 3-bed, 2-bath in a really pretty decent area would go for about 250 to 260 right now.
And that's high?
That's high. Guys, just to give you some context, I bought my house in 2008 when the market was pretty much crashed, to be fair. But I bought my house for $143,000, brand new, 3-bed, 2.5-bath with a garage. So like that just gives you a little bit of context.
Man.
A little bit more expensive than my but not too bad for in a way cooler area.
This sounds awesome to me where I am right now, where I've been the last couple of years. So Whitney, you must have been pretty young when you bought that house.
I was super young. I was 19.
Whoa.
I know. I was a baby.
So is this just something that you do in Idaho? You buy houses or were you an outlier?
No, I was definitely an outlier. I was kind of a weirdo. I was always into financial independence. That was something that was super important to me. And financial independence for me meant being able to take care of myself and not relying on anybody or anything for extra income. So when the market crashed, I saw a really cool opportunity. I was a good saver. I was like constantly working through high school. So I had a nice chunk of change put down for a house. And so that's when I moved in. I bought the property. I got a couple of my friends to rent out a couple rooms. So my house payment for me was like $300. So it was a good way to go to get me through college.
Okay, that's awesome. So you basically did some sort of house hack in order to get free board in college.
Pretty much exactly the case, yeah. I think that's a good way to go to it if you can do it. That's something that has saved me a ton of money. And it's not that you need to. I mean, a lot of people think, oh, I want my freedom. I don't want people to be there. I want to walk around in my underwear on occasion. To each their own. I just like to save a little extra money. So for me, that was kind of a good option at the time. But not necessarily a normal thing for 19-year-olds in Idaho.
Did other students at your school go to, they stay on campus? Or was it normal to live off campus?
You know, it was definitely a commuter campus. It still is to this day. So Boise State, the big blue turf, that's kind of what we're known for. That's I know. Have you guys seen it?
Yeah, I've seen pictures.
Yeah, I guess it's cool. We're just used to it. So a lot of my friends did live on campus as trying to just have that college experience. But for the most part, it's still, yeah, most, I want to say 60% are commuters.
Okay. All right. Nice. So it wasn't too out of the ordinary, but the fact that you owned it and then you rented it out to other people or the bedrooms out was pretty awesome. So I know you did that. And then from reading your blog, I know that you had another side hustle going on during college too. So I think you were a nail tech, right?
Yeah. I was a nail tech. That's exactly what it was. Manicures and pedicures.
Nice. So how do you go about doing that? Like even getting into that? I mean, I don't know. Like the thought of feet kind of creeps me out a little bit. Like I don't know.
Yeah, you're not wrong. So how it started was I grew up in a really crappy situation, very dysfunctional home. And so I had to figure out how to support myself during college. And frankly, I had no clue. I was a first generation college student. So I did what I thought would be a good idea. So I did a trade school. So I did the nail tech program, which took 3 months at that time. It was right when I graduated. The night of my high school graduation, I moved to Boise, which was 2 hours away from where I grew up. Then I went through the nail tech program. It took the 3 months, so it was just like perfect timing. And then I started college, got a job as a nail tech, and then started working all through college doing that. And it was good income. It was 100% commission, so I got really good at budgeting on variable income. So it was a good opportunity. I don't miss it by any means, but it paid the bills for sure.
Do you still have a sense of smell?
I do, yeah, because I didn't do fake nails. So I steered clear of that. I don't think that stuff's very healthy for you.
Wait, so what are you saying? When you get like, not gel, what is it? Acrylic nails or something? What is this?
Yeah. Yep. So the acrylic nails, that's the stuff that smells pretty dang strong. So I didn't do that. I did it for a little while and I just hated it. It's like the smell and all the dust. It was just gross. And so for me, I just did manicures and pedicures. So I worked at one of the truly best salons in Idaho and even across the nation. It's been recognized quite a bit. And so it was a really good luxury salon where we're talking like $85, mm-hmm. $95 for a pedicure. Whoa. And so it was good money. It was really good money.
Yeah, especially at 19. Okay. So you were like, whoa, I'm bringing in all this cash. But, you know, yeah. I'm sure you're paying for tuition too. So that was difficult. So what were you going to school for?
I went to school for accounting as my bachelor's.
Okay, nice.
It's nicely with the theme so far.
Yeah, it was good. I took a bookkeeping class when I was in high school, and I thought it was pretty cool. So I decided from that one class, hey, I might study this, and did that for a couple of years and ultimately didn't love accounting. I liked bookkeeping a lot more than taxes and auditing, but it's still, I mean, it's a good background to have for sure.
Okay, we're going to move on from this, but I just want to know, mm-hmm. Do you ever judge customers' feet when you're giving them a pedicure? Like, is that a thing?
100%. Absolutely.
We all want to know.
Oh. Yeah. Sorry to let you guys down. There's a little bit of judgment going on for sure. Usually, for the average person, it's not that bad, honestly. Yeah. But occasionally you would get somebody and you're like, we're going to let them soak a little longer.
That's hilarious. All right. Well, okay, we can move on. So I know when you graduated school, you had a little bit of student loan debt and you crushed it. So how did you do it?
Yeah. So I had $30,000 of student loan debt. Frankly, I did what I thought was normal. I just took out the student loans. I was kind of promised this, I think we all were, this fake life of when you graduate college, life's going to be amazing. You're going to get that six-figure job. You don't have to worry about finances at all. And so I was like, all right, cool. I'll take out some student loans so I don't have to stress as much. That was all fine and good until you graduate and you see that bill. And that's when reality really sinks in. So for me, my reality check was literally when I got that bill. And I remember thinking, this is supposed to be such an exciting time in my life, but I'm looking at 30 grand and I'm thinking that's almost my entire salary for my first year. Like, what the heck was I thinking? And so it was really scary to see that much money and realize that, oh, I got to pay that back. Like, it's not free money. You actually do have to return that. And so it kind of came to this fork in the road where I had to decide, do I quit the nail tech job, which you guys all know I didn't love, and go into just accounting, which was kind of what I wanted to do, or do I keep working the nail job and work as an accountant? And so that's what I did. I was a staff accountant in the day and then a nail tech at night, which was super awkward to talk to people about.
Yeah, I can imagine. So how long did it take you to crush that debt?
The entire debt process took me 10 months. And frankly, I was hustling. So I was working 70 to 80 hours a week. One of the things that I gave up was completely no eating out and no Starbucks. So I was just living on pretty much nothing. So it worked out really, really well. I rented my house out officially and moved in with my boyfriend. So that saved a little bit of money there. But it was a lot of sacrifice. It really was. It was not fun, but I would do it again in a heartbeat because I think 10 months is like nothing.
How did you live without avocado toast?
I know that wasn't a thing then, which is so sad because it's so great.
Avocados are so good for you too. You know, you can't hate on it.
No, I love them. But yeah, avocado toast was not, it just barely started kicking off in Boise. So we're maybe about 5 or 6 years behind New York and California.
You've been spared.
I've been spared.
Yes.
Yeah.
So you moved in with your boyfriend. How did it decrease your expenses though? Because you were paying only a couple hundred, right? Like, did you do this thing where you're like, hey, I'm not going to pay rent for a little while because I'm going to focus on my student loans, or how did that work?
Yeah, it's a good question. So even when you do own a home, so even if you rent out a couple rooms, you still have things like utilities, you still have maintenance, you still have to blow out the sprinklers every year. There's still quite a bit of costs that go into owning a home. It's never just the bottom line, unfortunately. And so ultimately, it was a net profit by me renting out completely the house because I could rent it higher than I was charging my friends for rent as well. So just to give you guys a little bit more context, my house payment's like roughly $900, but I could rent out the house for about $1,100. So that would cover a lot of some of the extra expenses. And so that's how it was able to save me a little bit of money. And it doesn't seem like a lot, but all those little things add up to being a lot of money, especially if you're trying to pay off debt. So it just made a little bit more financial sense at that time.
One of my favorite quotes about home ownership is the difference between renting and owning, and that renting, the payment, your rent payment is the ceiling, and with a house, your mortgage is the floor. It starts there and goes up.
Mm-hmm. It's so true. I love that.
Wait, what are you saying? You're saying that basically, like, you can just arbitrage the price of the rent you're bringing in against the mortgage?
No. So like when you rent, you know that your rent is say like $1,000 a month.
Yeah.
That's all you pay. You pay $1,000.
Okay.
But if your mortgage is $1,000, then your expenses start at $1,000 and can go mm-hmm. up depending on what happens to your house in the meantime.
I see. You mean like a variable versus a fixed cost.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, that is very true. I just had to buy a washer and dryer for the home that we own. And my husband and I were just kind of complaining about this because our tenants told us that the washer and dryer went out and we bought one and got it delivered within 24 hours for them. And our rent check is 6 days late. It's like, really? Like, we just threw you a bone. I mean, come on. So,
That sucks.
You can't win them all. Not that it matters. Like, we're not going to hunt them down because they're good. And if they pay a couple days late, I don't really care. But yeah, it's annoying. But Gwen, you have another accomplishment to announce. You got a person in your unit, right?
Yeah, I have a new tenant. And I'm very excited.
Woohoo! How did you find this person?
He found me. I put mine up on Zillow, which cross-posted to like Hotpads and Apartments.com or something. He found me on Hotpads and sent me one of those standards, you know, like so-and-so would like to talk to you about your unit. And I was like, oh, okay, cool, sweet. So I contacted him and we talked it over and he came and looked at the place and decided he liked it and he's moving in.
Woo woo. Congrats.
Congrats.
So this will be really helpful because instead of right now I'm paying $100 on the mortgage a month and with him in there, I'll have an extra $500.
Oh, get it.
So that'd be really helpful for paying for repairs coming up in the spring. Then when I move out, that would mean a whole extra like $1,000 in my pocket every month. So I'm very excited.
Nice. What are you going to do with it? Are you going to put it in a separate account or are you going to live on it? What's the plan?
I'm going to try and not live off of as much as possible just because I know that there are a lot of expenses coming up in the future. Even after I do the big projects this year, like, I know there's a bunch of drywall and stuff that needs to be replaced, and I'm pretty sure I still have knob and tube wiring in use in the house. So, hashtag gold house. Yay. So, yeah, I'm just going to try and save up for the future because I know expenses are coming and this is an old, huge house and it's expensive.
How old's the house, Gwen?
My house was built in 1910.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, it's beautiful, but old.
It really is pretty. I love it.
Do you have pictures on Instagram? Of course, I have to ask.
I don't know if they're on Insta.
It's all over Facebook. Gwen is on. Gwen, you're so public on Facebook.
Yeah.
Gwen is everywhere on Facebook.
Yeah, I have pictures all over the blog of the house, basically. So
you'll have to put it in the Facebook group when this goes live.
Yes, mm-hmm. We will. It's a neo-Georgian revival style house.
And it's blue.
Oh, so cool. And it's blue?
And I painted it blue. It was white and green, and now it's white and blue.
I love
that. What kind of blue?
A bold blue, like in your face, like bam, blue.
It's clearly blue. You drive by and you're like, that house is blue, but it looks awesome.
That's so cool. I love that you did that. That's amazing.
Yeah, the neighbors really, well, it was a very bold green, but now it's bold blue, which is not what I was going for at all. My nightmare contractor picked it out, and I was like, hey, but okay, fine. I guess I like that color too.
Wait, what do you mean? Like, you didn't tell her what to do? She just picked it? Or you mean you told her blue and she picked that one?
I told her, this is the chip that I want. And she said, okay. And that's not the color that I got. And it was just a disaster from the whole get-go. But I really did like the bright blue. So I left it.
Yeah, it looks really cool. Wow. Okay. Well, I'm glad that worked out for you. So, Whitney, yeah. What are your plans with your house? Do you still have it?
Still have it. Still live in it. So my goal now is to pay it off within probably about 5 years. And just free up the cash so that I can just travel a lot more.
I love that.
That's kind of my big thing. I love traveling so much. So anything I can do to save up some cash and just free up the... When you own a home, you're a lot more tied to it. But when you have it paid off, it's like you're still tied to it for sure. But you don't have to worry about the monthly expense. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the big goal is to how quickly can I pay off the house. So I've got that 5 years, but... If I beat it, I'm going to be pretty stoked.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So we'll see.
How long will you have had a mortgage at that point then?
That would be, so I got the mortgage in 2008. I refinanced in 2010 to get a better rate. Hindsight, I would not have done that. So since 2010.
Why?
So it'll be like 12 years. Why would I not refinance?
Yeah.
You know, I didn't run the numbers well enough to see when you're trying to pay off a house early. Sometimes that refinancing rate doesn't necessarily make sense. So I refinanced for 0.5%, which if I planned on doing like the standard 30-year mortgage, it would have saved a ton of money. But because I'm trying to pay it off so much more quickly, it actually didn't make much of a difference when I ran the math. So that's why I probably wouldn't do it again. But hindsight, you know, at the time I thought it was a good idea.
Well, and there are fees to refinance too as well, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I think it ended up being, I want to say 1.5%, but I don't recall. It's been a little while now.
So you like the location where you are right now? Are you walking distance of things or near the airport? Kind of where are you situated?
Yeah, so I'm kind of on the suburb between Boise and a city called Meridian. Mm-hmm. So Meridian's much more like family, all the, you know, 3-bed, 2-bath houses. So I'm really close to the highway, which is great because everything in Boise's, it's close. I say a commute, but it's like 20, 30 minutes to get downtown. So the airport's pretty close by as well. But I am so freaking blessed. So my backyard, I have to brag for like 2 seconds because it's so great. It's a really long lot. So I'm on almost a quarter of an acre. And next to me is like a common area swampish thing. And so there's like all these birds. That it sounds really weird, but there's birds and I see like the best sunsets every single night. So it is like my haven. I love it here. So I don't foresee me ever officially getting rid of the place because I just love the backyard so much. It just makes my heart so happy.
Aw. Is that a retention pond? Is that what it is?
I don't know. It's got to be. It has to be. I call it the swamp though.
Yeah. My house that I have, a retention pond was built across the street. They clear cut like 400 acres to make this development. It was very depressing because we bought the house. We loved the view of all the trees and you can go on hikes and walks or whatever. And it was in the mountains. It was sweet. And then they just boom, chopped everything. But at least we got the retention pond across the street. Hopefully. I mean, I don't know what it's going to shape out to be. And I don't live there anymore. So I need to just get over it, but I'm still I'm still a little sassy about that.
I think I would be too.
Yeah.
Get over 100 acres being chopped off.
Yeah, exactly. I know. Okay, so that's awesome. Yeah, the reason I'm asking is I've been talking a lot with my husband about buying a house, but we want to buy somewhere that we can stay in for a long time. Well, we want to buy a rental property, or we want to buy a big lot so we can put a tiny home in the backyard. So really, depending on, you know, what hour of the day you catch me, I'm going to tell you something else. But have you ever thought of that, about you have a huge lot, you could put like a Airstream or a tiny home and rent it on Airbnb?
Yes, I have been. So right by Boise, about 2 hours, 2.5 hours away, we have really great, beautiful lakes and just like kind of touristy cities. And so because of that, I've been watching property there, and I'm looking for, when I find a good deal, I'm going to jump on it. But just like a standard 0.25, you know, quarter acre lot where I can put a tiny treehouse on it. That's one of my big goals. I want to have a tiny treehouse so bad. So I've been watching.
My goodness. Yes.
Oh, man.
Wouldn't that be the greatest?
So I'm so into this that I started Googling, and I contacted this woman that she does this for a living, and she's going to be on the podcast. So I'm pumped.
What's her name? Is it Christy?
Yes. Do you follow her too?
Oh, my God. Christy's one of my friends. She's amazing.
No, she's one of your friends?
Yeah,
oh, man.
Yeah.
I'm so excited. I'm talking to her.
The Hobbit Hole?
Yeah. She has a Hobbit house, and she also has a tree house in Hawaii. Love her. Yeah, she's actually coming on the podcast. Well, we're recording with her tomorrow, but she'll be on another episode.
She is such a rock star. Yeah, so she's a Boise gal as well. So it's kind of weird. Like, there's a lot of tiny house people here in Boise. There's another gal named Macy Miller that's really big in that community, I guess. And so it's just cool to see this little tiny house movement taking place in Boise as well. So it's starting to take off a little bit, but it still has a long ways to go.
Man, all the cool people live in Boise. Maybe I need to check it out.
You guys have to come.
Yeah. Well, my friends that live there, they didn't want anyone to know how cool it was. They're like, don't tell anyone.
I don't care. I think everybody should come here. It's great.
Okay, cool. Yeah, maybe I will check it out.
We do have a crappy airport, though, to be fair.
Yeah, that's all right. That's all right.
I mean, it can't be perfect, right?
Yeah, you can't have
right,
it all.
That's right, exactly.
So the next thing I want to talk about, your master's degree. So you paid less than $500 for this. So tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, it's kind of a hack that I wish more people knew about, because it can save you so much money. So my entire master's degree cost me $472. And the reason how that happened is, I mean, if you guys all heard my story, I paid off all the debt. So I kind of did this pinky swear thing to myself where I was never taking out student loans again. And so I knew I wanted to go back for my master's, because at that time I was over public accounting, realized really quickly, not for me, sounded good in theory, but I thought corporate marketing would be really kind of my gig. So I went back for the master's to try to get a little bit more experience into managerial stuff. And so as I was going through that program, I was looking at all the different ways to pay for it. And I made a list, and I listed out every single way I could think of to pay for a degree without taking out student loans. And so I had stuff on there that was like working for a job that does tuition reimbursement. I had military on there. I had scholarships, graduate assistantships, where you work for a university, they pay you a stipend, and then they cover all of your tuition costs. And then by chance, I really did luck into this. I was working at the salon at that time, and I had a gal come up to me, and she was one of my clients, and she worked for Boise State University. And she said they were hiring somebody to do grant management, and that they were really looking for someone. And if I knew anybody, let her know. And I didn't really pay that close attention, because that's not something I really wanted to do, was work for a university. But what I found out was, she said, hey, if you work for a university in a full-time position, one of the cool benefits, aside from really great health insurance, is that you get tuition benefits. I was like, well, what does that mean? And so she told me that when you work for a university, you get discounted tuition. So you pay $5 per credit. And so I immediately was like, I think I'm interested. And so it was enough of an in that it made a lot of sense. And so the part that's a little tricky is sometimes they do cap that. So on occasion, they'll say it's $5 per credit plus a small fee up to 9 credit hours. And so that's exactly what it was for me. It was up to 9 credit hours. So I did the part-time MBA program. So it took me 3 years instead of 2. There was a couple late fees in there, but that's how I was able to do it for $472. And so it's a good option. And I wish more people would look into that too, because it's, I mean, it's so cheap and almost every university offers that.
Yeah, I think Brandon, the mad scientist, had that for his master's. I think
he did do that. He did. Mm. And then I think they let him work remotely too, if I got that right, if he didn't switch employers. It's kind of cool.
That's amazing. Yeah, universities are, they're really flexible, especially if you're going to school. You wouldn't think so, but they're pretty willing to work with you on your schedules too.
Awesome. That's a great option for people to look into. In my background, I also didn't, I wanted to get my master's degree, but I didn't go full time. I did it online at night and had my work reimbursed. And that they reimbursed 80%. So it wasn't as cheap as you ended up getting, but still a great option. I really wouldn't recommend folks to go back to school full time in every situation. It's probably a better option to work while going to school. But, you know, there are a lot of situations that don't fall in that category, too. Mm-hmm. Gwen, would you ever get a graduate degree?
Nope, not going back. Can't make
I know. Actually, I just graduated at the beginning of this year. So it's kind of funny that I'm on a podcast right now talking about early retirement and all this stuff because I just finished my degree. So if I really want the ROI, I should probably wait a little longer, which I will.
Congrats on finishing too, though.
Thank you. Thank you.
That is exactly why I do not want to get my master's, is because I'm not going to use it. About the only thing that I would ever go back to school for is an MFA. And that's a master's in fine arts, and do something artsy fartsy related and learn a bunch of, like, you know, actual skills from people instead of just cobbling it together off the internet.
Huh. So you actually, you'd want to learn practical arts knowledge.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I would go back and I don't know if I would, like, specialize in a certain subset of the arts like most people do when they get their MFA. But I would definitely love to learn ceramics and to get better at stained glass. And I could do stuff with fabric arts. And yeah, basically, I just want to do all the artsy fartsy things.
Cool. That's so cool.
Yeah, at first I thought you meant art history. And I definitely want to learn. I want to learn more about that because I want to learn art history and music and all these kind of Renaissance man things that I learned at one point in my life and just completely forgot. But it would make you a more cultured person. Languages. I'm still interested in all that stuff. But I have no time. I'm doing all these things. And I feel like at the end of the day, I don't have time to expand in that way.
Jay, you're learning new languages. They're just languages like, you know, C# and Java.
Python.
Yeah.
No kidding. Are you really doing that?
Well, I'm learning Python for my work. But I learned Java in school. So I did learn languages. And I mean, it's different, though. It's different. It's different. I'd like to be able to speak.
I think it's amazing.
Oh, thank you. All right. So now that I took us on this tangent, I want to go back to your story. Where did this whole financial independence and money thing come from? It sounds like it was a theme all throughout your adult life, but when did it really hit that you wanted to be a money coach and make this your thing?
So I'm going to take you guys back a little bit further, and this will give you some context of why I've started to really dedicate my life to helping people with finance, including myself. I definitely throw myself in that pool. It was because I watched my mom stay in a really bad relationship for 27 years. It was abusive. It was full of addiction. It was just really not great. And so she finally divorced truly for her life, which sounds a little extreme, but that's really what happened. And so when she did divorce, she was a single mom, no education, no finances. She took care of the kids. I mean, for years, that's what she did. She was a stay-at-home mom. And so when she divorced, she moved to Boise. And that's when I started learning the true value of personal finance and what it can do for you. So there was a period of time where we actually slept on the floor of this, like, really tiny apartment. And there's six of us, so there's a lot of us. And my mom and I were walking one day, and that's when we found a mattress in the garbage can. And so we grabbed that, and we were so stoked, you guys, that we thought that was the coolest thing in the world. And I was 16 when I first started realizing that that stuff mattered. So that's when I saw that and was like, oh my gosh, you know, there's a real difference between a want and a need. And so it started to drive me forward, and it started to get me to read books and just learn a little bit about compounding interest. And I saw those charts and was like, oh my gosh, this is the coolest thing ever. And so I started seeing that and learning and educating myself. And then once I got to the point where I graduated, paid off all that debt, I started having people ask for help with their own finances. And that's where I would sit in like a Starbucks and teach them how to do a budget and how to put together a get out of debt plan. And that's when it started to hit me that, you know, there's something here and maybe I can make a couple $1,000s a month off of this was my initial goal. And so that's where it all began. But I didn't really think that that was an option. I didn't know online businesses existed. I didn't know coaching was a thing. I just thought that that's just a nice thing that you do to help people. And so it didn't really hit me until the MBA program. And that's when that businesswoman in me turned on and I was like, I see, this is a moneymaker. I can do this and I can help people. It doesn't have to be one or the other. So that's kind of where it all stemmed from and where it all began was from watching my mom stay in a really crappy relationship.
I love that.
Yeah, I have shades of that as well. You know, my parents divorced when I was two and my mom raised us three kids by herself. You know, just worked her fingers off to provide for us. I never had to sleep on the floor, thank goodness. But, you know, there were, my sister remembers when they were super poor and they had no idea where the next meal was going to come from. You know, a church lady would come by and drop off a casserole and that was their food. Like, you know, like, so I'm very grateful that my story wasn't as extreme as yours, but it definitely does hammer home, you know, all those differences that most people take for granted.
Mm-hmm. So speaking of the church lady, who's going to be that church lady for our generation? And I don't mean church, but the reason I'm bringing this up, I remember growing up, I had an aunt that she would do things like that. If we had leftover food from a family weekend, she would go to all of the elderly people that lived in her neighborhood and give them food or stop by and help them and do all these things. And sometimes I think as a generation, the millennials, we're looking inward sometimes and maybe we're not giving out as much, or at least where I am right now. Do you guys feel like there's a need that we have to give back more than just financially?
Mm-hmm. 100%. Absolutely.
Yes.
So as Gwen and I talked about on the food blog episode, I don't think our cooking is good enough right now to give to anyone else, but maybe we'll make that a goal for ourselves. 2018.
It's a struggle, right? And then you see all the Pinterest recipes and you feel like I'm so inadequate.
I know. I bet you're good at the nail art though, because I always see those like holiday nails and I'm wondering how would I ever do that myself? Do you do cool old designs and stuff?
I used to. I don't know if I'm any good at it anymore. I've been out of the industry for so long now.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'd be any good.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I struggled to make puppy chow the other day, so...
I don't even know what that is. You don't even have a dog. What are you talking about?
No, puppy chow's so good.
Are you being serious right now,
no,
Jay?
I honestly have no idea what you're talking about.
You don't... They're called Muddy Buddies somewhere else, too, as well.
Nope.
The Chex Mix and it... Oh, my goodness. We need to ship you some.
And chocolate, and then you shake it all over with powdered sugar?
Yeah, we call that trail mix.
No, that's not trail mix.
Okay, we'll have to link to this recipe because I don't know what you're talking about.
I've never had puppy chow before.
I'll look it up.
It is seriously good stuff. It's like good. Peanut butter covered Chex Mix with sometimes chocolate chips. And then, yeah, they just put powdered sugar, chocolate, all kinds of good stuff on it. It is heaven.
That sounds amazing. Okay, I'll have to look it up.
Oh, I'm sorry, I can't wrap my mind around this right now. What?
Wait, what do you mean that I don't know what that is?
Yeah.
I didn't grow up in the middle of the country, guys. I grew up on the coast. We don't talk about these things. Puppy chow? Like, what do you...
They have puppy chow in Boston.
No, they don't.
Oh, my goodness.
You have to.
All right. Well, we'll move on from that conversation about food. You'll have to enlighten me about all these things I've missed out on. Okay. So next thing I wanted to chat about, so you have some cool hobbies, but it sounds like we have a shared hobby. You also really like hiking, and I know you've done some really awesome, really challenging hikes. So can you talk a little bit more about that and maybe particularly the two that you've done that are particularly challenging?
Oh, I love hiking so much. So the hiking thing really stemmed from I was kind of going through this phase in my life where I thought I never have enough money to go travel and it's frustrating. I'm never going to get there. I'm never going to have enough money, never going to have enough time. And finally, one day I was like, you know what? Screw this. I'm just going to go on a weekend adventure and I'm going to just go see how it goes. So I drove 9.5 hours to Zion National Park where I did Angel's Landing, which was so dang cool. Have you guys done that one?
No.
No,
oh,
I drove through, but so I had my dog, so we had to just like go on the walking path by the river. It was kind of sad, but you know, it is what it is.
Okay, you'll have to go back.
Yes, I will.
Really, really, really cool. So that was my second kind of scary-ish hike. And then that one was, I mean, it's a shorter hike, but you're definitely like 1,300 foot cliff drops on each side of you. You're holding onto a chain. You're climbing up this little thing. And it was really quite nerve-wracking, but I had psyched myself out from watching so many YouTube videos about this hike that it really wasn't that bad. So that was the first one. And then the second hike that was really, really amazing that I highly recommend was the Kalalua Trail in Kauai. So it's along the Nepali coast. And that one is so beautiful, too. So in hindsight, we had no idea, my poor fiance, we had no idea that these were dangerous hikes until a little bit later. And then I start looking at like the death counts and I'm like, oh my God, people actually die on these hikes, but they were both so cool and just so different. So I love hiking and pretty much do it almost every weekend that I can.
That's awesome. And another plus for Boise, access mm-hmm. to hiking. So did you do that on a weekend trip? You did Zion? What is it? Because did you get back on a Sunday? Like, how does this even work?
Oh, the Zion one was over 4th of July weekend.
Oh, okay.
So really crappy time to go to a national park, but that was the only time I could do. So that's kind of what stemmed this almost 3 years now of every single weekend I will drive sometimes 8 hours over a weekend just to go hike around, which sounds crazy, but I love it. And I get a lot of really good podcasts and audiobooks in. So I think it's a ton of fun.
I love that. Cool. So do you work full time doing your business or do you also have a job on top of that?
So I do have a job on top of it. So business is kick and butt right now, but I do still have my full time job. So one of the things that I am blessed and fortunate to do is work with startup entrepreneurs in my role at Boise State University. So that's where the program I launched my business, I also joined them to help expand it further. So what I'm doing now is I did that for a few years to get the business to a point where it was actually making money and I could financially make that leap comfortably because financial security is super important to me. And so it's finally to the point where I can do it. And I've committed to a few things over the spring, but I'm officially jumping ship in May. So I'm pretty dang stoked about it.
Whoa. So yeah. You and Gwen will be running wild this spring. Watch out, everybody.
Watch out, world. We're going hiking.
Yeah, seriously. Oh, I'll be so sad if you do that.
And eating puppy chow.
And eating puppy chow. Well, I don't know what I'm missing out on that one.
Everything.
So much.
So that's awesome. Congrats. And it sounds like you found a cool way with your full-time job to balance some of your interests and get paid for it there too. So that's cool. I actually just applied for an EIN today. So that was a big moment.
Woohoo! That is a big moment.
Yes. But the reason I did is I'm opening a Fidelity solo 401k. And I don't know if you have one for your business or you do, Gwen, but I was looking into it so that I could max out my 401k for my husband this year because he worked a little bit on my blog this summer. And you can include your spouse in the solo 401k.
No way! I did not know this. I do not have that currently open.
Yeah, so I had to get the EIN in order to open the account with Fidelity. But I was looking at all the different solo 401k options, and Vanguard has one, and a bunch of other, E-Trade has one. But Fidelity, I think right now, at least that's what the Webosphere says, that one is the best one. But there's another one, my solo 401k, that allows in-service withdrawals. And from what I looked at last night, it looks like you may be able to do the mega backdoor Roth with that, if I understand it correctly. Maybe we'll have a nice discussion in our Facebook group after this to see if anyone's done that option. But with Fidelity right now, you can't do that. So for anyone who's listening is like, what are you talking about? If a 401k program allows you to, if you can make after-tax contributions and then do an in-service withdrawal, you can roll over your after-tax contributions to a Roth IRA. So that allows high income earners to contribute to a Roth when they're not able to before. So that'd be pretty sweet. But I don't want to pay for the My Solo 401k upfront. Fidelity is free to open. So I'm going to do that.
I do have an EIN.
You have an EIN. Okay. I didn't have one before.
But I haven't done anything with it yet. I just have it.
Cool. Well, hey, maybe you can do the Solo 401k now too, and we can figure it out together.
You know, honestly, I was looking into it the other day because I want to do a self-directed 401k where mm-hmm. I can take the money out and invest in real estate on my 401k's behalf.
Mm-hmm.
So that'd be a good way to get access to that money and put it to use.
Yeah, I think some of the options have that. I don't know. Fidelity may have had an agreement with someone else so that you can, in conjunction with them, like open it or something. I forget. But I think you were limited on the main one. Could be wrong.
Yeah, I don't think Fidelity does that. You have to find ones that are specific, like firms do that.
Yeah, but I'm not just doing it. I mentioned my husband because he's not going to be able to max out his 401k this year because he started his job in September. But additionally, I can contribute a percentage of my income that I've made on my business. Like I think it's 25% or something in that account as well. So you can get more tax deferred savings, which is pretty cool.
That's amazing. I'm going to have to do that too. So I'll learn this with you guys.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's do it. Guys, party in the Facebook group, Solo 401ks.
Heck yeah.
Yeah. All right. So let's chat a little bit more about some of your hobbies. I have one that I have a confession to make that I was also interested in too. So it said on your blog that you were a figure and bikini competitor. And I know that that's tons of work. And really hard and involves a lot of spray tanning. So I wanted to learn more about it.
Oh my gosh, so much spray tanning. It was same year that I started paying off the debt is when I started to lose weight. So I gained the freshman 15 plus a little bit. So I was not very happy with myself. I was walking with my fiance boyfriend at the time downtown Boise. And you guys, a homeless guy came up to me and asked me if I was pregnant. I'm not joking.
Oh,
and I'm like,
man.
Oh, frick. Aww. Yeah, like worst day ever. So that's when I was like, okay, I'm going to figure this stuff out. I got to lose some weight. And so I went on this running spree and lost a ton of weight in a month because I was running every single morning in the freezing cold. It was December-ish. I was going through that process and I didn't like the way my body was looking. I lost weight, but it didn't look any better. And so my fiance was like, well, you got to start lifting weights. That's what you have to do. And so I initially was like, I can't look bulky. I don't want muscles because, of course, I thought I'm going to lift some like a little bit of weight and I immediately get bulging biceps, which I wish it worked that way. So I thought that was the case. And so it got me into lifting more powerlifting style when I first got started. And I needed a goal to go after. I'm very goal oriented. And so it was, maybe I should try a figure competition. And so I put myself out there literally in a bikini in front of hundreds of people on a stage with way too much spray tan. And it was so much fun. I just got addicted to that life. So it was, I did it for about 3.5-4 years. And now I still lift. I don't compete anymore, but I hope to get back into that too once I free up a little bit of my time. It is just such a fun lifestyle that can totally consume you, but it's really, I don't know, it's just fun to see your body change so much. It's really fascinating.
Yeah, I had a roommate 1 year in college. I moved home and I didn't want to move in with my parents because we were having issues. So I got my own apartment for the summer and I got paired with a random roommate, which was a whole ordeal. But anyway, she ended up being pretty cool. Anyway, she was in the figure body lifting, you know, like the whole world. So she was interesting to live with because everything in the kitchen got weighed, like literally everything. And she had protein powders all over the place and was just like crazy about it and was super good influence on me. You know, I ate super healthy that summer, but it was just like, whoa, that is a lifestyle for sure.
It's a good lifestyle in some ways. I got to be honest. I still weigh most of my food anymore. It's like if I have a chicken breast, I can eyeball it to exactly 4 ounces. It's really a stupid talent, but I still have that talent. And so you get used to it. But more than anything, it's super budget friendly because you cannot eat out because you don't know what kinds of oils and how much everything is going into it. So you start to get in the habit of really watching everything. So to this day, I still meal prep every single Sunday. It's just part of my routine, and I don't really eat out. Not because it doesn't taste good. It's just part of my routine. I don't know. So it can be very budget friendly too.
So what are some of the other foods? I had a friend who did it, and she ate tilapia and mm-hmm. a lot of fish, and that was allowed. Like what were some of the other things that you ate?
So yeah, definitely a lot of tilapia, chicken. I love chicken. So it's still something very much on my list. Lots of steak. A lot of people think you can't really do that, but you can. Tuna was another big one for me. I went through phases where I would sometimes do cod, but honestly, it's like, I actually felt like I was eating pretty dang good. Not like from a health level, but just people would constantly be like, hey, what are you eating? What's your meal? I liked it. I thought it was pretty cool. And Mrs. Dash is a lifesaver. So if you use that, you're set. Like, you really don't need anything else. It's pretty good stuff.
It's like a spice that makes things taste better. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, it's no sodium. So it's okay. Kind of nice for that, because when you're getting closer to competition day, you have to really watch your sodium levels because you can bloat out significantly. And so you have to be careful of that. So the Mrs. Dash is really useful for that purpose. And that was most of the protein, some protein powders, of course, some protein bars, but it was like lots of veggies, lots of brown rice, white rice as well. Sweet potatoes, I ate a ton of those. And I go through phases. So to this day, it's like I'll prep all my meals on Sunday for like lunch and dinner. But my breakfast, I always make fresh every morning. And that's just something I've just always done. So yeah, it's actually not that crazy. People think it's like the weirdest lifestyle in the world. And it can be if you're doing it very unhealthy. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, it's not too bad. You can do it really in a good way that's not trashing your metabolism, and you can still eat really tasty things.
Right, right. And the key is the lifting, too, to combine that. Because I think a lot of people, particularly women, I know growing up, I thought cardio was the answer and I'd run everywhere. And I still love it. I mean, it feels really good to me, releases endorphins, I'm happy. But lifting is where I've seen results in the past.
It's good stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. When I was a swimmer in high school, I was forced into the weightlifting program instead of gym by my coach. And I was in shape. Let me tell you what, I was ripped and it was awesome. Of course, you know, I was like swimming 5 miles a day, which helped as well. But yeah, I basically was working out all the time.
You probably had like the best shoulder caps in the world.
Dude, my shoulders were amazing. I had my shoulders ever. I called them my man shoulders because no shirts that I bought in the store would fit ever.
Oh.
The caps would always like come up because my shoulders are just like, wow, massive.
Yeah, no, I really aspire to be a strong lifter. Although with so many things in my life right now, I don't prioritize it. And I go through phases where I'll lift really heavy and I'll squat heavy. And I've mentioned this in the podcast, but my husband is in the strength and conditioning field. So sometimes I listen to him and I get in really good shape. And other times I'm like, leave me alone. I just want to eat my brownies and, you know, not do this. So I really go back and forth. But some people on Instagram that inspire me, Jazzy Thinks. I don't know if you've ever heard of her.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I follow her and she's awesome. But she competed recently.
It's so much fun. I truly think if you need a goal, if you're very goal oriented and you're into fitness, a bikini or a figure competition is the best way to go, because you learn so much about yourself. You learn a lot about your body and it really pushes you to get out of your comfort zone. So I used to be terrified of like public speaking stuff. And once I started getting on the stage in a bikini wearing 5-inch clear heels, you start to immediately think, okay, maybe public speaking isn't really that big of a deal. I've done worse. I've been in front of hundreds of people in a bikini. So I think it's like some really good benefits too, mm-hmm. aside from the physical area.
Cool. I love it. I don't know how we segue out of this one.
Bikinis.
We went down a bikini rabbit hole here. Oh, but the last thing I wanted to mention about this, they're not cheap. So if you want to be competitive, the bikinis are expensive. And if you, from my understanding, if you want to be really good, you may have to work with a coach. So this is not a budget. Given that this is a financial podcast, just mention that part. Although I think sometimes in this community, we focus on the short-term savings. Like, I don't want to pay for my gym membership and forget about the long-term. I mean, you've learned all these awesome things. Like, I mean, you've eaten all these fish and you know you could weigh chicken and say how many ounces it is. That's something that it will help you be healthier throughout your whole life and maybe decrease your health costs and have you do more and have be able to do more in your life. So it's there's a huge benefit there.
The other piece, too, that I think is really cool about fitness in general is that discipline that it takes for you to get your butt to the gym is the exact same discipline it takes for you to stick to your budget or to build up your savings account, whatever it might be. We think that they're so different, but that discipline transfers directly over to your financial life. So I think it's a really important piece, too, is if you can train yourself to stick to something, it'll likely trickle over to other areas if you let it. That was one of the things that I thought was pretty cool was I was paying off debt and losing weight at the same time. And so it was just, it was the exact same discipline. So to me, it was a, it made sense that it happened at the same time because it was literally the exact same skill set.
Yeah, but see, the problem I have with comparing those is that I can set up automatic stuff for budgeting. Mm. I cannot set up automatic workouts in the gym.
Wouldn't that be great, though?
Yeah, I really would. If I could just turn my brain off and just set my body to work in the gym, then I would be so in shape. But I like naps.
I think people do that, though. I mean, they just get in the routine and they zone out. I know I've been lifting a little bit before we record these podcast episodes. So if I'm a little pumped up, now you guys know why. The first time I did it, it was awful. But now I just do it and whatever. It's a thing. It's my routine.
Yeah, it does become part of that subconscious where you don't even think about it. It just works like clockwork. But it's easy to fall off that routine too, I will say. When I started the business stuff, I immediately, that was one of the first things that I gave up on a little bit was I was used to be working out 6 days a week. It went down to 4 and then it went down to 3 and then pretty soon I wasn't going. And then all of a sudden I had to get back on track. So it ebbs and flows. So it's rough sometimes, especially when you're a business owner working a full-time job.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And if you have a family, I mean, something has to give. Mm-hmm. And I can see how this can get cut on the list of priorities pretty easily with everything going on. But it's important. Mm-hmm. All right. So I think that's a good segue to our final two questions.
So Whitney, where can people get in touch with you if they want to reach out after this airs?
Yeah, the best place to come learn about me is at WhitneyHanson.com.
Okay. And then if you could do anything in the world, have anything in the world, what is your wildest dream?
I'd probably have my tiny house on the lake, which sounds so weird, but that's what I do.
Not crazy at all. We've got some answers that have been way more out there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I love it. And I think that's one of my dreams, too. I don't know about tiny house. I want room for my family, but I want a lake house, too. Just relax.
That'd be so
in the lake.
Great.
Oh, so peaceful. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. With the canoe, just go out there every morning. I think it'd be so cool.
And a moose swimming. I swear when I was growing up, at some point I saw a moose swimming in a lake in person. I don't know if I made this up or not, but now I have this vision. I want to recreate this peaceful moment with a moose swimming by. Maybe I'm in a canoe. It's awesome.
Okay, but I'm just going to say that mises, yes, that's not the plural, but I don't care, will mess your stuff up. So stay far away while you're observing because they get a little on the testy side if you get close.
Safety tip of the podcast episode. All right, Whitney, we'll let you go. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you. I had so much fun, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to today's episode. Go to our website, firedrillpodcast.com, to continue the discussion and get the link to our private Facebook group.
If you like us, leave us a review on iTunes. If you're like me, you have no idea how to do that. So, in the podcast app or in iTunes, search for Fire Drill Podcast, find it, click the Reviews tab, and write something to make my mother proud of me. We read every single review and want to say thank you from the bottom of our hearts for making this podcast possible.